Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, Buglers. Welcome once again to another raid into our own archives in an episode of Top Stories. Today we go back to September 2013 and issue 245 of this esteemed audio newspaper. Well, thank goodness we don't have to spend too much time thinking about Syria these days. I'm sure everything there is all absolutely fine, but that wasn't the case back in 2013 when our episode was entitled Syria, Too Complicated for Five-Year-Olds.
Top story this week, Syria. Ooh, Syria. One for all you Phil Collins fans out there. The drumbeat for war, or at least attacking Syria, is getting louder and louder, Andy, with President Obama beating the drum of war like it's a Neil Peart solo. One for all you Rush fans out there. This is a glib way to start talking about Syria, but frankly, you know, you have to find a way to lighten this up. Well, you don't have to, but I choose to. Now, all of a sudden, America seems intent on, you know, at the very least, airstrikes, and at the very most, airstrikes on Syria. And you might think, why now? You know, this humanitarian crisis has been going on for over 2 years. More than 100,000 people have been killed. 2 million refugees have fled Syria to neighbouring countries. And the international community has proven its ability to be laser-focused in its determination to ignore everything that's happening over there. Why this sudden concern for the welfare of the Syrian people? Well, it all comes down to chemical weapons. Not so much having them, any country worth its salt has them, but using them. Chemical weapons are not supposed to be used, they're ornamental, they're like a garnish. They're supposed to make your other weapons even scarier. And this current flashpoint comes down to an alleged attack on civilians in a Damascus suburb on August the 21st, in which 1,426 people were killed, over 400 of which were reportedly children. The White House claims that Bashar al-Assad is responsible for the attack, which Assad claims that he wasn't, and that either there was a naturally occurring sarin rainstorm somewhere, or that the civilians must have somehow done it to themselves to make him look bad. And that might sound ridiculous, Andy, but it's actually what some Syrian officials are almost suggesting, arguing that the opposition were behind any such attacks and that they were encouraged to do this by the West. Deputy Foreign Minister Faisal Mehdad claimed that it was a tactic by the rebels to turn around the civil war, which he said they were losing. And that's a classic move, Andy. They gas themselves, playing the long game. It's just like during the Battle of the Somme, Andy, when we mustard gassed ourselves to prove that we could take a punch. It made sense then, and it makes sense now.
It's all pretty depressing, John, as you've suggested. I was away in Spain for 10 happy news-free days. Prior to that, I've been concentrating on the final test match of the England-Australia Ashes series. So I'd basically had almost 3 weeks away from any form of reality. And I returned to self-styled civilization on Wednesday to basically find that not only was Syria about to explode internationally, but that British politics had been tearing itself apart like a masochistic fox in a pack of hounds outfit. And the world was now teetering on the edge of its biggest international crisis in years. There is a kind of general sense that a happy and harmonious solution to this whole shebang is about as likely as Elvis Presley making it through qualifying for next year's World Snooker Championships. Even if he is still alive, he'd be 79. So even if he has been locked in a snooker hall for the last 36 years, he's almost certainly past his best.
Assad has challenged President Obama to present evidence that the Syrian government was involved in the Damascus chemical attack, saying those who make accusations must show evidence. We have challenged the United States and France to come up with a single piece of proof. And look, I'm not a UN weapons inspector, Andy, and I am sorry if I ever suggested that I was one, but I guess the evidence is probably at the very least fourfold for that. One, the piles of dead bodies with no visible wounds. Two, the fact that Assad wanted to do it. Three, the fact that he had the capability to do it. And four, the fact that no one else f***ing did. That really does point the finger of blame, at the very least, in his general direction. Obama claims that the world must act and that this is a red line that Syria has crossed, although, again, to be fair, America has in the past been a little wriggly on the exact shade of red that would necessitate a response. When Assad was previously accused of a chemical attack, all of a sudden the red line looked a lot more pinkish. It definitely had a significant rosy hue to American eyes.
Well, also, I mean, there's been a lot of this talk of this red line, and, you know, because there have already been chemical attacks during the 2 years of the Syrian conflict. Suggestions by the UN's own reporters that both Assad and the rebels may have perpetrated them. So where is this red line? As you say, arguments over whether the line was red or just a really dark orange in a strange light, or as the various sides, the Russians and the Americans and the Chinese and the British, rifle through their paint catalogues to decide exactly what colour the line was. A burnt sienna line, or a Hawaiian sunset, a Leninist brick, or a blushing priest line, perhaps even a Vermilius Tomatista, a squashed Andalusian puppy, a rampaging watermelon, or a tuberculotic rat mucus line. Maybe even the classic, unless we have this in our living room, the chafed mountaineer's testicle line. I mean, what exactly is red,
colour.
John? What is
that's a lovely colour. It really it warms up a room, that, doesn't it?
And also, what colours were the lines marking out the slaughter and maiming of tens of thousands of citizens by fair, honourable and largely pain-free conventional weapons, and the displacement, right, if you say, of millions through strategic but non-chemical and therefore gentlemanly state terrorisation? There's some exactly very oddly coloured lines in this conflict.
Syria is becoming a particular flashpoint due to countries using it as a vessel through which to essentially piss each other off. It's now not just a civil war, as it serves as a proxy war, with Iran, Hezbollah and Russia taking sides against Saudi Arabia, the Gulf Sheikdoms and America. Russian President Putin has been very critical of the US, saying that Secretary of State John Kerry lied in his testimony this week. He said, "He lies openly and he knows that he lies. This is sad." Now, here's why that's suspicious, Andy. Judging by his face, I don't think Vladimir Putin even has the capacity for sadness anymore. In fact, I think the only time he might even approach sadness is whenever he suspects that he might just have been happy. That's the only time he gets even close. President Obama has opted not to take executive action on Syria and has chosen to ask the permission of Congress first instead, probably less out of a desire to follow the exact letter of the US law and more to say, look, if I'm going to eat this shit pie, you can at least all have a slice of it with me. He's attempted to reassure those doubters by saying that any military action would be, and I quote, limited and proportional. Essentially, he's having to reassure people in Congress that the strikes will basically do nothing. You know, they won't suck us into a war, they won't remove Assad and make us accountable for the consequences. They'll basically be pointless. In fact, if it makes you any happier, the missiles will be empty, or they'll just have a little flag that comes out the end which says bang in funny letters. He even went so far as to describe it as a shot across the bowels of the Syrian government, rather than trying to tip the balance against it in the conflict. It's just a warning shot, Andy. We're just going to aim the missiles slightly over their head or in front of their feet to make them dance. That's all we're going to do.
Well, this isn't the great tradition of the international response to the Syrian crisis, which admittedly has been a situation as complex and awkward as a teenage hydra with a penchant for chopping its own heads off. But for whatever reason, the UN's previous resolutions to try to force Assad into line have not worked. Resolutions ranging from now via come on, simmer down, oi oi, and I mean really, all the way to the one that nearly broke him, Resolution 2065. And none of those have worked. And this is why now the governments have been trying to force themselves into action. David Cameron, British Prime Minister, mm-hmm. recalled MPs to vote on whether Britain should give military support to an American strike, and he lost the vote. It was the first time in 300 years that a government has been defeated on a military action decision. And in those 300 years, we've taken a fair amount of military action. That gives it some kind of context. And we have the now traditional sights and sounds of politicians opportunistically accusing their opponents of political opportunism. Cameron accused the MPs who voted against British intervention of failing to, quote, take a stand against the gassing of children. And then he said that Britain will be one of the leaders, despite this vote, in bringing forward plans for a peace process for Syria. Thus, I guess, taking the kind of stand those MPs who voted against him presumably thought was a better way of standing. And it's all... I chose a very good week to be away on holiday, because I think I would have smashed at least three televisions had I been here.
In response to the UK losing that vote, or David Cameron losing that vote, the US said it would continue to consult with the UK, who are, and again, I quote, one of our closest allies and friends, going on to say, pussies, and grow some balls, grow some actual balls. David Cameron, in his attempt to convince Parliament, talked of the evidence that the US has of the chemical weapons strike. The problem is that having America say we have evidence of chemical weapons rings a little hollower than it once did after that whole Colin Powell and his prop anthrax bottle of the UN shaboggle. In fact, that evidence now rings so hollow it basically echoes back at you, even though that evidence is clearly real.
Yes, it's a kind of, the old boy who promoted Wolf the Musical scenario.
Exactly.
It's a classic, this is a classic case, John, of history repeating on itself, with the acid taste of half-digested failures of the past chundering their way back into the world's throat and producing one of the more noxious global belches of recent times, if I may stretch an unnecessary metaphor.
Thank you for listening, Buglers. More top stories soon. Our merch sale is on the verge of ending, so do go to thebuglepodcast.com to get the good stuff now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.